Everyone who needs Refuah Shleima should have Refuah Shleima. Thank you very much. There's a woman that we're learning also. Her name is Sarah Yael Bas Itaneta. Sarah Yael Bas Itaneta is the daughter of a very big tzaddik. Sarah Yael Bas Itaneta. And she has totally gone off the derech. The tzaddik called me today and he said that it would be very big if we would learn for her to be machzir b'tshuva. So he said that I should say her name and then everybody and say a bracha that she should be machzir b'tshuva, and that all the girls in the shiur, if they say amen, then he knows 100% that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give her the das to be machzir b'tshuva. So, her name is Sarah Yael Bas Itaneta. And tonight we're learning that her neshama should be machzir b'tshuva and she should come back to Klal Yisrael. Thank you. Okay. So my subject matter tonight is the Chanukah that just passed. We had 8 days of Chanukah. Tonight it was sort of weird that, you know, I came home and there was no lighting of the Chanukah menorah. You get so used to 8 days coming home and lighting the Chanukah menorah and the whole family sitting together. And all of a sudden we're thrown into this darkness. We're thrown back into the winter. It's cold. It's dark. It's a very long winter this year. We have an extra Adar. It's an Adar Sheni. So, you know, usually it's Chanukah, it's Kislev, then you have Teves, which we're in the middle of, and Shvat, and then it's Purim. This year it's even longer. There's an extra month till we get to Purim. So it's a long stretch. And it's already cold. And it's already dark. So, it's not so cold? Pretty cold. Well, outside it was dark. Anyway, but it isn't dark. It depends how you look at it. So I'd like to talk a minute about what we should do with the Chanukah that has passed. So we spoke about the last 2 weeks. There's an Ahagana, there's a hidden light that God puts on the world in the 8 days of Chanukah, and that every person has to take from that hidden light and wake up, find the hidden light, like do Bedikas Chametz. You do Erev Pesach, you take a light, a candle, and you go into the house and you check out for all the Chametz. So the light, the Ahagana on Chanukah was supposed to go into our souls, and we're supposed to look for the hidden light, look through the Chametz, find the Chametz, get rid of the Chametz, and find the hidden light that's in all of us. But Chanukah is over. So what do we do now? So it's brought down in Sfarim, very deep thought. Imagine you're in a room with a child. And you tell the child, well, actually not in the room yet. You close the lights in the room, and you bring the child into the room, and you ask the child, what's in this room? And the child says, it's dark. There's nothing. I don't see anything. There's nothing in the room. And you say, well, I'm going to do magic. I'm going to say a couple of words. And in this room, there's going to be a dresser, a closet, a bed, pillows, blankets. Because I'm a magician. And the kids are going to say, really? Mr. Wallerstein, you're a magician? I say, yeah. Watch. Now it's dark. And now I'm going to flip on the light. And I flip on the light. And all of a sudden in the room, there's a bed and a dresser and a closet and pillows and blankets. And the little kid looks up to me and says, Rabbi Wallerstein, they were always here. You can't fool me. I'm not that silly. They were always here. All you did was you turned on the light. You didn't create no bed, no blankets and no pillows. You just flipped on the light. It was all here before. That's what Chanukah is all about. All the secrets and all the Kedusha and all the holiness that we are supposed to see and that we see on Chanukah, it is always there. The thing that Chanukah does is it brings us a light in order to see what is in God's room, what is in this world, to think about why I'm here. What's going on in this world? What is the difference between the Yevanim, the Greeks, and the Jews? And I'm not saying what I said last week, you know, the Israeli salad and the Greek salad. That's not the difference between us and them. So Chanukah is a time where everything is in the room, but in a world of darkness, we turn on a light and we look into ourselves and we see what's always there, which is our potential, which is what I'm going to talk about tonight. We see what's there and we understand that it's not created. Potential is not created on Chanukah. Potential is there when you're born. But Chanukah is when God flips on the light so that you can see what's in the room. But now it's dark again. Chanukah is over. So what does a smart person do? I said this a long time ago in a shir, of a person who's walking in a thunderstorm. And he's in the woods, and it's dark. And he's scared he's going to walk into a hole. He's going to walk into a tree. He doesn't know where he's going. And all of a sudden, the thunderstorm starts, and there's a bolt of lightning. So the smart person, when there's 1 second of light in the forest, he looks. He uses his eyes, and he looks in the forest, and he sees, okay, 10 feet from here, there's a tree. But I know I can walk 10 feet. And then he stands and he waits until there's another bolt of lightning. And then he says, oh, I can make a left here. And he uses every bolt of lightning to continue to get himself out of the forest. That's a smart person. The silly person is like looking up at the lightning and walking. Wow, that is so cool. Smack, face right into a tree. That's the silly person. He says, we have 8 days of Chanukah. And maybe I should have spoken about this last week, but I kept you here till 11 o'clock anyway. And on Chanukah, every single day, it's like a bolt of lightning. You're supposed to see one more path in the way that a person's going to go for the rest of his life. So that even though now we're going into a winter and we're going into a darkness, we know how to go through this darkness, because in those 8 days, we use that light in order to go through our heart and our soul and to realize what a person needs to do. And I'm hoping, you know, I asked the girls today in my seminary class what they got from Chanukah. Sometimes it's nice to have a little chabura, 10 girls, 8 girls, so you could, you know, talk back and forth. Here I'm always giving you a speech. So that's why Mitzvah Hashem, by the, when we have the Shabbos together, so we have the Shabbaton, one of the most exciting things, even for the Rabbein, is we have Ask the Rabbi. And we start Ask the Rabbi, and whoever has been there knows, we start at like 11 o'clock at night, and the girls all come into a big room. We have 3-4 rabbis, and you can ask anything you want. And for the last couple of years, I have left the group, the rabbis, at 6 in the morning. Because at 6 in the morning already, they're asking me about halachas of Shabbos, and I'm answering what cereal I like. You know, I don't even know what I'm talking about anymore. So I realize at 6 o'clock, I should be getting up. But Rabbi Skaist and Rabbi Miller, they would sit there till Shachris. And really, the highlight for the Rabbeim is not me getting up and speaking and not the food. The highlight is to get a chance to talk to the girls and let them ask us questions. When we give shiurim, you can't let everyone ask questions because you're not going to get through your shiur. But my seminary class is not such a big class. And I asked them today, I said, tell me what you got from Chanukah. And there were many, many different answers. And I can't go through all the answers that I got today. Some of them was I got nothing. Some of them was I got a nice present. And that wasn't the answer I was looking for. So I think what we need to do after tonight's shiur, when we go home, and there's no menorah in our window tonight, is to think about, what did I get from Chanukah? What light could I take from Chanukah that'll help me make it till Purim? That'll help me make it through these winter nights, through these cold nights? That's the tachlis of Chanukah. That's what we need to do. Tonight I want to talk a little bit about the whole Greek way of thinking and how it has totally affected us, and the Jewish way of thinking. I'm speaking Bezrat Hashem this Matzah Shabbos. I'm having the honor of speaking after Rabbi Krohn. I don't even know how I'm going to go about that, but to Matzah Shabbos, so there's a few shiurim. There's a shiur in Navi by Rabbi Reisman, and then after his shiur, there's a special speech by Rabbi Krohn and by myself on raising children in this generation. And I'm probably going to say some stuff that they'll never invite me to speak again. So I'm going to try it out on you tonight. I'm going to practice on you. And if I get past you, then I'm going to be able to say it. It's going to be, I don't know, I think Rabbi, it's in Achiezer, right. In Achiezer. Right.
What time?
I have no idea. Whenever they send the car for me. I'm going to, I'm gonna say something tonight, which I guess you'll send me emails tomorrow. You'll tell me what you think of it. I said it over today to someone, and they said you could say it. So I'm gonna talk about it. But let's just start talking about first about the whole thinking of the Greeks. Okay. I am very against. I don't like to say I. I shouldn't say I because that means like you. Who are you, right? Okay. I know someone that's very against. I'm a Rebbe for 30 years. And I'm not against that. But I'm against giving test marks. Test marks. Marks on tests. Why? Why am I against that? Judaism, Yiddishkeit, the nation that God chose for himself, all of us, we are not based, our lives are not based, and in the next world is not based on what we achieve. That is not what Hashem judges us. After 120 years, it doesn't matter how many pages of Chumash that you learned, and it doesn't matter how many pages of Gemara that you learned. We are judged on effort. Amelus batora means the work that a person puts in order to learn Torah. We are judged by effort, by how much you work. Of course, it wouldn't be fair to judge a person by achievement, because some people are born with 160 IQ, and some people are born with photographic memories, and they open up a Gemara or a Chumash, and they read it like a book, and they know it upside down, inside out, and some people have to read the page over 120 times, and they still don't remember it. Now, God is the one who gave us all the gifts that we have, and therefore, he doesn't judge us by how much we know at the end of life. He judges us on how hard we try. In our generation, that doesn't exist. We don't care how hard somebody tries. In school, you could have a student that gets straight hundreds on their test without any effort whatsoever. They're brilliant. And then you have a student who works at home for 4 hours, has a tutor, studies on Sunday, kills themselves, and gets a 70. And there is no recognition in chinuch for that child. Because on that report card, it's going to say 70. And it's going to say fear. Below average, 70, fear. And that kid killed themselves. And the kid that got the 100, who did nothing, because they were born brilliant, that's the one who becomes the valedictorian. And when you have a school, and you put up a kid as a valedictorian, you are spreading the way the Greeks, what they put into this world. Because what did the Greeks put into this world? The Greeks created the Olympics. The Olympics, and it brings down that the Jews, we have to know something. Everyone thinks Hanukkah, this little group of Maccabees, they fought the Greek Empire, they beat them, and the Jews lived happily ever after. If you learn Megillat Chashmonaim, one of the greatest times of assimilation of the Jews marrying non-Jews, of the Jews becoming secular, was in the times of the Greeks. Why? Because the Greeks were very brilliant. They started the Olympics in a big amphitheater, and the Jew in his natural state is extremely competitive. We're a very competitive nation. We need to be competitive, or we would not be able to exist amongst the 70 nations. And in the Torah, there is no competition. There is no mitzvah. You send me an email tomorrow, or leave me a message. If you can find a mitzvah in the Torah that's a competition between two people. My tzitzis are longer than his. My tzitzis are made out of gold. Then your tzitzis aren't kosher. My mezuzah is written in gold leaf. Then your mezuzah is not kosher. There's no mitzvah in the whole Torah, in the whole Judaism, where there's competition. One time, the Gemara says, there was competition in Judaism. The Kohanim used to do what's called Trumas HaDeshen. the ashes on the Mizbeach had to be cleaned off. And any Kohen that would do that would become very rich. It was a skula to become very rich. Which Kohen got to do it? There were a lot of Kohanim. So they set up a racing system where they would take a bunch of Kohanim and they would have them race up the ramp to the Mizbeach. And the one who got up to the Mizbeach first, he won and he was able to do it that day. It didn't take long, says the Gemara. The two Kohanim were running up the ramp and one said, "You're not beating me," and he pushed him off the ramp. And he broke his leg. And a Kohen that has a broken leg cannot do any avodah. It's called a mum. So the Rabbanan, the rabbi said, this is not Judaism. Competition, having a race to get up on top of the Mizbeach, this is not for Jewish people. And they changed the whole thing. And they did always a lottery. It was one of the lotteries that they did in the Beis HaMikdash. There are no such thing in our Torah as competition. God doesn't reward the winner. In fact, in everything that he did, when he gave the Torah, he took the smallest mountain. Not the biggest mountain, but the smallest mountain. And when he made a Nes Chanukah, he made it from the small, teeny little can. He could have made a miracle that the Greeks missed. A 40-gallon drum of oil. No. Judaism is not about how big the drum of oil is, or how tall the mountain is, or how beautiful you are, or how fast you are, or how strong you are. Judaism is about effort. It's about fighting to wake up in the morning to pray. It's about trying. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges us. God will not judge me and say, "Rabbi Wallerstein, why weren't you Rabbi Moshe Feinstein?" Because he doesn't expect me to be Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. He might ask me, "Why weren't you Rabbi Wallerstein?" But he's not going to ask me why I wasn't Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. And every girl in this room, I'm just taking names, Sarah Goldberg, he's not going to ask Sarah Goldberg, "Why weren't you Rivka Imenu?" He's going to ask Sarah Goldberg, "Why weren't you Sarah Goldberg? Why don't you live up to your potential? I gave you a very good midah of kindness, and I gave you the ability to sing, so why don't you go to nursing homes and sing for old people? Because that's what I gave to this girl." So what God asks us all at the end of the day is not what did you accomplish, but how hard did you try to accomplish? And the whole basis of what we live in America and the school system is you are what your mark is. That's it. Or what your cell phone number is, but that's it. One of the two. And therefore, the whole thing of rewarding one kid at the end of 8 years of school and saying, "She represents our yeshiva," is so wrong. Because in that class of 42 girls, there might be 41 other girls who tried their hardest, so they weren't 100 students. So the principal should get up and say, "All our students are equal. They all made it through 8 years or 10 years. They all tried. They all graduated. They all passed. Hakol shava. They're all equal. And we're very proud of all of them. Not having an English one special and a Hebrew one. And all those other girls sit there and they feel like, oh boys, they're losers. Because she's smarter, but I worked much harder. What are we teaching them?" But that was what the Greeks came up with. They came up with a race where there's only one winner.
That's Yavon.
Everybody. That's Yavon.
No, Yud, Vav, Nun. They're all the exact same shape. One is larger than the other.
Very nice. Would you like to give the shit tonight? The word Yavon. Thank you very much. The word Yavon is a Yud, a Vav, and a Nun. Yud is a straight line, but it's small. Vav is a little bit longer. Nun is much longer. So the whole word of Yavon is a race. One is smaller, one is bigger, and the next one's even bigger. And that's, thank you very much. That's the whole, that's unbelievable, that's amazing. What? You can't talk. You're not here. I told you last week, you're not here. Rabbi Freeman said this?
Something about it, and then I got the idea from what you
said. Okay, very good, very, very good. So, that is Yavon. Yavon is competition. You have a girl, when I wasn't such a big tzaddik, which I'm not even today, but when... So I once saw a clip, a show on a girl, a very famous girl, I forgot her name, from Romania, where she was one of those famous gymnasts. And she used to get up, they did a whole thing on her, and she used to get up at 4:30 in the morning, and she practiced in a barn in the middle of the winter where it was like 20 degrees below zero, and she would practice aerobics and whatever she had to do for the Olympics, and they started off when she was like 4 or 5 years old. And she every year, and all the other girls were having fun and playing around and being kids. This kid wasn't a kid since she's 5 years old. Practice. She came to the Olympics, and she was on that horse. I don't know what it's called exactly. And you have to, like, you know, balance on the horse, and you have to do a flip. When you land, you have to land flat on your 2 feet. You can't take a step. If you take a step like that and you put your foot back, you lose a lot of points. Balance. Well, guess what? Balance beam. Thank you. You guys have really helped me. I got a good front line here tonight. Okay, excellent. So on the balance beam. So here's this girl who worked her whole life. You can't even imagine such a thing. Since she's a little girl, she has no life. There's no dolls. There's no games. There's the balance beam, right? She comes to the Olympics. This is her chance. She does her flip. She lands, and she takes that step. And automatically, all those people that are sitting there who never did anything in their life, the Japanese judge, the American judge, and this one's judge, and that one's judge, minus one, minus two, minus this, minus that. And of course, she lost her whole, she didn't get the gold that year. She got nothing because she moved her foot back a half an inch. So what are the Greeks teaching us? That you could work and work and work and work, but if you make a little bit of a mistake, all your work is worthless. You'll never hear her name. She'll never be on a Wheaties box. She'll never be on a Nike commercial. You'll never hear from her at all. She's dead. And her whole life, that's all she did was work and work. And I don't have to tell you, you've watched ice skating and all this. They make one mistake, they're gone. They're finished. So we teach children, we teach the world, that you can work so hard, but if you're not perfect, you're nothing. That is what the Greeks brought to the world when they brought the Olympics to the world. And we all became part of that world. And then from the Olympics today, they have, which is also, it's terrible. You know, they have this Miss America and Miss Universe. And they take these women, right, and they have them parade in front of the whole world. And they say, you're not as pretty as her, out. You're not as pretty as that one. And they leave him with 10 runner-ups, and they're all standing there, maybe I'm the one. And then they announce, and now there's only 5 runner-ups. You're ugly, you're no good, you said something stupid, you sit down. And everyone's watching Miss America, and this is what we're teaching our children. If you're not the most beautiful girl, then you're ugly and you're a loser. And you know what? The third runner-up gets nothing, and the fourth runner-up gets nothing, and the second runner-up gets nothing, and they're nothing, and their whole life they're working on becoming Miss America, and they walk away, zero. She's talented. She goes around the world and helps children. Have a nice day. The judges picked this one. So the rest of you, out. You're finished. This is the world we're brought up in. So you want to know why there's depression? You want to know why people get depressed? Because you can only have one number one. So I'm not as pretty, and I'm not as smart, and I'm not as this, and this one is the valedictorian, and I'm not the valedictorian, and the parents fall into the trap, and why didn't you get 100, and why didn't you get a 95, and what's this business coming home with a 70? I pay all this high tuition, I spend all this money, we've all heard this. Well, not all, but most of us. And that's why I sent you to school, to come up with a 70? And the kid's thinking, Mom, I'm really trying. Trying for losers. Trying for losers. You have to accomplish. When I used to, the old days, there was a famous football coach. I'm not going to talk that much football tonight, but the famous football coach who said, it's not whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game. And that's beautiful. That's so not Greek. It's like, it doesn't matter whether you win or lose, just play hard. You know, my hockey coach told us in the first game, he came into the locker room and he said, forget what that guy said. That's stupid. He said, it's not whether you win or lose. It's whether you win. That was my coach. You can't losing. There's no losing. You can't lose. You're not allowed to lose. And what happened? Somebody here must be playing hockey. So what happened to us? So we came into this chinuch world, and I'm not jumping on the chinuch world because it's the whole thing in life, and this school has 2 hours of homework. Well, if you have 2 hours of homework, why would girls come to our school? We only have an hour and a half. So now we're going to have 3 hours of homework. Oh, they have 3 hours of homework? Whoa, we got to outdo them. We're going to have 4 hours of homework. The poor kid goes to school for 10 hours a day, right? And then the teacher says, okay, I just want you to read page 1 through 140 and answer all the questions, but more, it's going to take 6 hours. I know. Isn't that great? We have 6 hours of homework, and the school down the block only has 5 hours of homework. And the whole thing became an Olympics. Life became one big Olympics. That's all it is. And even in the Olympics, if you watch the Olympics, I'm not telling you to watch the Olympics, but if you watch the Olympics, right, that winner stands on top, and they play the song of the country, right? And she stands on top, and they stand there with the gold medal. The other two are usually crying because the silver and the copper, they're real losers because they were 1/8 of a second away of being gold. You know what I mean? The one who came in 10 minutes later, okay, well, you know, hello. But you miss it by a second. You're just stomping, you know? So they're usually standing there crying, if you watch. And the rest of the ones who raced, the other 9, they don't exist. They came in 1 millimeter of a millionth of a second. That's why they didn't win. And their whole life, that's what they're working. Do they go over and say, and we'd like to thank the other 9 runners for making it such a great race and for trying so hard, and here's a present for you and a present for you and a present for you. No, they don't exist. You don't even know who they are. You'll never hear from them. They don't exist. The only people that exist are the champions, are the winner. That's it. Even it always bothered me, and I'm not going to say Chas V'Shalom that I watched the Super Bowl, right? But if I would have watched the Super Bowl. So the Super Bowl is that last game that the whole America watches between the two teams, right? It's $5 million for 15 seconds advertisement. And we're thinking in Ornava to do a 15-second little sequel about Ornava in the middle of the Super Bowl. We just didn't raise the money yet, right? Come to Ornava. That would surprise everyone, right, in the middle. We're working on it. We'll see how much we can raise. You know? It's all about change. How long does it take to say, oh, it's all about change? The whole commercial will be 3, 4, 5 seconds. That's like $5 million. Why? Because the Super Bowl... The team that wins the Super Bowl is the best team in football. Now, you got a bunch of guys that are playing a whole year, 14 games, getting their brains knocked out, getting smacked around. These are professional athletes, right? And you have the Super Bowl, you have the two supposedly best teams in football playing. I'd be very happy if I was in the Super Bowl, even if I lose. There are so many teams, and I came out to be the team that's in the Super Bowl, right? And I'll never forget this picture. And at the end of the Super Bowl, the one team wins, right? And of course, they jump up and they're screaming and they're carrying everybody around. And then they take the camera because it's Yavon. We live in Yavon. And they zoom in on the losing team. And there's this big guy. He must have been a 350-pound linebacker. Only big, big guys, right? And he's sitting on his helmet. His helmet's on the floor. He's sitting on his helmet with his hands on his knees, crying like a 2-year-old. And they're focusing on this. And I'm saying to myself, one second. The guy's making $22 million a year. What are you crying about? So you lost the game. The psychology is that if you didn't win, then everything you did a whole year and everything you prepared for and this guy's whole life flashes in front of his eyes. He died. It's over. You lost the Super Bowl. Life is over. And kahoya, because the team that loses... The next hour, 4 hours, 2 days in the newspapers, you don't hear one word about the team that loses. It's all about the winner. So the whole life that we are taught is about being a winner, and that puts crazy, crazy pressure on every single person. So we want to know why people are taking pills and people are going to psychologists, because if I'm not the best, not I'm second, I'm nobody, I am nothing. Nobody pays attention to me. So I have to be the most beautiful one in the room. If I'm just beautiful, it's not enough. I have to be the most beautiful one in the room. I don't have to tell you. I'm not doing advertisements for Revlon and all the other makeups, but I think it's a $1 trillion business because everyone has to look prettier than the next one. It's not about us anymore. It's about my competition with him. I got to be better than him. She has to be better than her. What about you? Just you? No. They teach us, if you're not the most beautiful, you're not Mrs. Universe. And if you don't win the game, then you're a loser. And this is how the whole Goyish world, and not the Jewish world is we're not judged by being the best. You don't have to be the best davener to be part of a minyan. You just have to be a davener. You don't have to be the best at anything. Doesn't say in the Torah anywhere you have to be the best. God just wants you to do. God just wants you to try. I mean, advertisement, I was writing some notes today to myself. I'll give you the whole gambling is based, the psychology of a gambler. Why would someone who works 40 hours a week to make $500 get on a bus? Not Jewish people, on a bus on Friday with the $500 they just worked 40 hours, go down to a casino and lose those $500. And go back the next week and lose those $500. And sometimes borrow money to lose money. What are you, Meshuggah?